Show airs the first Saturday of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, go to her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Welcome to the 2023 WGTD Education Matters Kenosha Unified School District School Board Candidates Forum. I'm your host, Karen Sconsert. There are two candidates running for one seat this spring, Mr. Lamar Madison and Ms. Yolanda Santos Adams. The Kenosha Unified School Board election will be held Tuesday, April 4th. We're recording this on Wednesday, March 29th. I will explain the format and the timing for the forum in a moment, but first, as a matter of full disclosure, I want to say that I am an associate professor of education at Carthage College in Kenosha and therefore have a lot of experience with various KUSD schools. I'm also a former KUSD parent whose child attended from K through eighth grade. I no longer live in the district, so I can't vote for either of the participants in this forum. I will also note that we are recording this forum from our homes, so there may be glitches in sound or unexpected visits from pets or family members. And in my case, there might be testing the fire alarms in my building, so hopefully we'll get done before that happens. The format for our program will be as follows. Each candidate will have up to 90 seconds to introduce themselves and tell why they're running and their qualifications for the position of school board member. After that, I will ask a series of questions, and each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer. I'll give you a 15-second warning as your time is running out. Please adhere to the time limit as well as you can. I also want to say to both these candidates that on behalf of the citizens of Kenosha and everywhere, it is really hard to run for office. So just running is a challenge, and we appreciate all the effort that you're putting in and your desire to serve. So the order of the candidates will rotate with each question. So candidates will have a chance to answer first and then second, and then we'll switch. So at the end of our time, each candidate will have a chance to give a very brief closing or summary statement. So we're going to start with introductions and opening statements. So, Mr. Madison, you get to go first. You have 90 seconds to tell us why you should be on the Kenosha Unified School Board.
Thank you so much for hosting us. My name is Lamar Madison, and I am running for the KUSD School Board. As a parent of three young children, two of whom that are in the KUSD schools, I have a personal stake in the future of our district. And I know that many of our parents as well have personal stakes. The truth is that KUSD is not on a good trajectory. Our district average testing rank is in the bottom 50% of schools in Wisconsin. But I believe that things do not have to remain this way. I have faith that with the right leadership in place, things can and will turn around. That's why I'm running for the school board. I am committed to putting students first and ensuring that every child in KUSD has access to a high quality education that prepares them for success in life. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And now, Ms. Adams.
Yes, I also want to thank you, Dr. Sconsert, for hosting this forum this morning and WGTD Education Matters. I've been on this show several times and good information to get out to the community. I am Yolanda Santos Adams, and I am a 68-year resident of Kenosha, and I am the product of these public schools. I went K through 12 in public schools. I have three children that graduated from these schools, And I have 11 grandchildren, and I have 4 great-grandchildren. So 4 generations in Kenosha Public Schools. So I want to say that my current 3-year term does expire in April 2023. Therefore, I'm running for re-election. I continue to share the belief that in our mission state, which is to provide the excellent learning opportunities and experiences that will prepare our students for success. And we've been doing this for years at Kenosha Unified. So I bring with me prior board service, and I also want to ensure taxpayers' dollars are spent wisely.
Okay, thank you very much. So I know you've sort of already said this, but I want to ask you both, what in your background in particular makes you feel you'd be qualified as an effective school board member? Like, have you served on other boards? What are some employment experiences, et cetera, that you think make you a great school board member? So we'll start with Ms. Adams this time.
Okay, thank you. Good question. I have the financial experience I believe is needed in these tough times of budget cuts. My experience in the community has been since I was the age of 20. I've served on numerous boards and commissions and committees at the state, national, and local level all my adult life. I have years of experience reducing expenditures and balancing budgets. So I am the budget person on the board. I was 20 years ago when I served previously as the board president and the board treasurer. And I just think that I bring to the board fiscal responsibility. So I think that my life experiences in the community, my life experiences in the different employers that I've had. I've worked for big companies, I've worked for local nonprofits, and all of that I bring with me so that I give a unique perspective from a person that walked the halls of these schools, was educated in these schools all the way through college, and has worked in the community for American Motors. I've worked at the Urban League. I was the CEO of the Urban League of Kenosha and Racine. I was on the board for 20 years of the Spanish Center, but I also served on boards that were non-traditional for a Hispanic. So, you know, I served on United Way of Kenosha. I served on the Alcohol and Other Drug Council. So I have a lifetime of service to the community, which I think brings value to the board of directors.
Hey, thank you very much. Mr. Madison, your turn.
Thank you so much. I have a lot of experience with working in the private sector. I think we have this misconception that you had to be in the education system or you had to go to school here to be effective. Schools around the country, you know, pretty much run the same way. I have ran, you know, when I worked in Cuba, I was a chief administrator of a detention facility. When I was in Germany, I was the director of emergency services that involved a lot of union workers, American workers, responsible for over 15,000, the safety of over 15,000 inhabitants of that base. Same thing in South Korea. You know, when I was there, I was the police chief in South Korea, where I was in charge of a huge base, and we conducted town halls and listened to our citizens. Comments and concerns, and we made it a safe place for them to live. So I have a huge experience in dealing with multifaceted companies, what I do right now, and also just working in large government agencies. So I know how to get things done. So I think me being on the board will bring a new perspective, because right now the board just keep recycling the same people. If you go back, if you keep going back, the same people have been recycling the board, and we're still in a deficit when it comes to the budget. So I think having that fresh perspective coming in will serve the KUSD board some justice.
Okay, thank you very much. So teacher shortages are already a big problem and are likely to get worse as the last of the baby boomers retire and fewer people are going into teaching. So how do you propose to attract and retain enough qualified teachers to KUSD? And Mr. Madison, you would answer this one first.
Well, first of all, the first thing I would do is get a hold of the budget. 80 to 85% of the KUSD budget goes toward salaries and benefits, right? And being in debt, next year is looking to be about $20 million in debt. we have to get a handle on the budget before we can even talk about retaining people, because, you know, teachers don't work for free. They have to make a living. They have to, you know, have bills to pay like anyone else. So I think, first of all, let's get the budget under control and figure out a way. It's a multi-pronged approach. Figure out a way. How do we become solvent in the school district? And at the same time, how do we facilitate getting qualified teachers, the teachers we want to keep in our district, and keep them from moving out? Because it seems like the teachers who have very few years in the system, they're very easily to go. Like for them, it's a revolving door. And then you got teachers who are trapped because they've been in the system too long, and it's hard for them to go out and get another job. So we need to bridge that gap and figure out how, because right now teachers are getting paid off COVID money, and that COVID money is going to run out. I think about 200 teachers right now is on the COVID money. And what happens when that COVID money runs out? Like, how do we keep these teachers, you know, employed? So those are some things I've been thinking about. I have not been on the board, so I don't know all the nuances to what Ms. Adams are privy to. So I have to go in there with a multi-pronged approach and figure out how do we keep teachers hired, become solvent debt-wise, and make it a great place for them to work by giving them back their HSA accounts. So we're taking money from their accounts now just so we can save money.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Adams, same question?
Yes. It's very concerning that all across the state and the nation, you know, teachers are leaving the profession. And that's happening in Kenosha, too. We know that things have changed. Act 10 changed the negotiation rights of the, you know, we're doing what we can at Kenosha Unified to recruit, hire, and retain teachers to our district, no different than all the other districts in our state. For instance, Racine Unified's having the same problem. Madison has the same problem. Milwaukee has the same problem. We're all kind of going after the same teachers. But what we're doing at Kenosha Unified is, you know, we have a program where we're growing our own teachers through our high school students. We're getting them excited about the teaching profession. That's going very good. We had a report on that at last night's board meeting. And I think, working collaboratively with our teachers and our teachers union is what's going to help us understand why the teachers are leaving our district. And as it relates to the cutting of the HSA, that was, the board did that in a phase out. So we didn't do it immediately. We had like a 3-year phase out of that benefit. And that was to give teachers and employees enough time to get ready for that. So we understand teachers are burnt out. The benefits are being reduced, but when times get better, if we get to a point where we're not at declining enrollment again and we get more money from the state, we're going to be able to bring those back. That's the good news. So this is a temporary, let's get through and balance the budget, and we'll all work together. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. So this next question will be Ms. Adams first. How do you evaluate and utilize data and evidence to inform your decision-making as a board member? How would you ensure the evidence-based reliability and validity of the sources that you use?
Yeah, evidence-based data. We have excellent staff administrators in the area. We have Mr. Keckler, who is able to get us all the data we need before we make our decisions. So, we're large enough. We're one of the third largest districts in our state. and we have the capacity to really be able to make comparisons between our district and like districts of like size and number of students. And we do that. Before we make decisions, we get excellent reports from administration, you know, recommendations from the superintendent. We look at those, we evaluate those in what's called agenda review meetings. So before a board meeting, a lot of the people watching don't understand that we've already had a meeting before the board meeting to go over the agenda items and ask our questions and get additional reports from administration or from staff. So we do not just go into a board meeting and there is an agenda item and we vote on it. We've already did most of the question and answer part of that particular topic on an agenda prior to the meeting. So this is something that works really well for our district. We didn't do that 20 years ago when I served on the board, but we're doing it this time. And that really helps us to make sure that we're evaluating and looking at the data before we make very important decisions, particularly as it pertains to the budget and staffing and students.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Adams, how do you evaluate and utilize data and evidence to inform your decision-making? And how do you ensure the evidence-based reliability and validity of the sources you use?
Well, without data, you have nothing. You're shooting in the wind, right? I have been watching these school board meetings, and the staff at the administration does a really good job of bringing data to the school board members for them to make decisions on. Now, I have this thing what I call, you know, plan, do, check, at. You plan what you're going to do, you do it, you check on what you're doing, and then if it's not working, you adjust course, right? So when you're looking at evidence-based, you got to make sure it's not biased. You got to make sure that it's coming from a great place. And whatever the information take you, that's where you go. The bias information, we have to like make sure we're not going down that road. But what I have a problem with is the data is given to school board members, right? Since, for example, 2010, 2011, 2012, we've been on a downcline in this district for a long time. And the data was given to the board members, but I feel like nothing was done, or they didn't respond adequately enough to hedge off what we're facing right now. So having the data and not properly using it is just as dangerous or have a negative impact on not having data at all. So I would take the data and actually use it to make sure that we don't end up in a situation where right now where we're $10 million in debt, next year to be $20 million. We have to cut teachers' benefits, and we have a hard time retaining teachers. So data without execution is just as bad as having no data at all. And that's how I would use the data, is to from the staff to inform my decisions. And it's a collaborative effort to make sure that we are going down the right path. And we can't get into a situation where we look for reasons to keep going when things are not going correctly. When things are not going right, we look for a reason to keep going. So thank you so much.
Yes, thanks. I just want to take a moment to reintroduce, in case people are just tuning in right now. This is Karen Sconzert, your Education Matters host for this 2023 Kenosha Unified School District Candidate Forum. We are here with KUSD board candidates Lamar Madison and Yolanda Santos Adams. So the next question goes to Mr. Madison first. Where do you draw the line between parent voice and professional opinion? For example, should parents be allowed to censor books or curriculum for students other than their own children?
I would say it's a collaborative effort, right? I don't know what reason when you talk about censoring books, I'm going to say that we're talking about books that have pornographic material, the gender type books that are in our libraries that kids can see. Those books have no business being in a school system. If I showed my child that same book at home, I would be charged with a crime. So I don't know why our school system can have books in schools like that. That's not age appropriate. So for parents not wanting. I saw one other day, I think it was called Gay Queer, and I looked through the pages, and it's literally pictures of people being very explicit, that stuff that no kid should be looking at, you know, let alone adults. So parents have every right, you know, to hold the school board and administration accountable when we have books like that in our school system. So 100% agree that parents should be able to censor, you know, at least bring that issue up and censor the books. We're not talking about Jack and Jill went up the hill. We're not talking about, you know, Little Red Riding Hood. We're not talking about books like that. We're talking about pornographic books that the pictures are very, pretty much, you know what you're doing looking at those pictures. So yes, books like that should not be in the school system.
Okay. Ms. Adams.
Yes. You know, I believe in parental involvement and, parents' voices need to be heard, of course. You know, those are voices that we need to hear from. But at the same time, we are a public school. We are not an independent charter. We are not, religious school. You know, we need to have partnerships, that are between our teachers, the parents, administration, and the community. And that's what builds our successful public schools. We're talking about public schools here. And I do not believe that, books should be banned, just based on, a parent's, position on a certain book. We do have, standing committee meetings. And we have community members that can serve on those one of four standing committee meetings. And one of them is the curriculum. And, you know, we have a place for parental voice where they volunteer. I want to say that I was a volunteer for a full couple years before I ever joined the board 20 years ago. I followed what the school board was doing and what the curriculum was for my kids who were in high school at the time. But there's got to be, you know, the public school administration and the school board has to be sure that all children are welcome in our public schools and that they're all treated the same and that, yes, all parents have a voice, but that there's a collaboration around that. And, you just can't have a certain group of parents that can ban books. So I would not be in favor of that. Although I want to hear from those parents and, you know, it's something we can discuss at the board level or at the, you know, we have policies around these things that we can revisit policies, see if they need to be revised a bit. But again, I just want to say that, you know, voices, all parents' voices are important. But it's just not the parents, it's also the teachers and it's also the administrators and it's also, the board members. So I would not be in favor of banning books, but I would like to listen and make a decision as a collaborative group.
Okay. So, so this next question goes to Ms. Adams first. How do you bring disengaged or disconnected families to the table?
Disengaged and, families, that's part of the role of, the school family, the teachers, the principal and the whole school. But as board members, we bring, you know, we can, you know, make sure that, you know, we hear from them again. You know, we have, emails where we're available by email. We're available via text messages. We're available by letters. And, you know, we bring them to the table by being inclusive and, you know, just opening our as school board members, you know, our listening to, you know, we want to listen. So I would just say that we have to make sure that if there's families that are not being, not receiving the communication adequately, that we address that issue. And I just think our school district does a very good job of that. You know, we do have families that are engaged and we do have, organizations that work with these families and oftentimes are their voice. So Urban League, you know, brings issues to the table, to our attention as board members. We have the Boys and Girls Club. We have, you know, all of our various nonprofit organizations that are also advocates for our parents. I wanted to speak specifically to the Hispanic parents. So we do also have, individuals that work with our English language learners. And, that's how we reach out to them and we make sure that their voices are heard. So open door policy for board members and the community.
Okay. Mr. Madison, your turn.
Yeah. First of all, let me say that when I talk about banned books, I'm talking about, I don't believe in banning books, like take them out of circulation. I'm talking about banning books out of the elementary school, not of the high schools. If you want to, if you want to put them, on Amazon or get them in other locations, fine. You know, you can get whatever you want. I'm a libertarian when it comes to stuff like that. So I'm not into banning books. Those books shouldn't be in our schools. Exactly with your current question. The, we have to go to where the parents are at, right? We can't, again, we can't save everybody. If parents don't want to be engaged, that's their prerogative. And, you know, and we can't act like we can make them do things they don't want to do. With that said, we need to encourage them to get more involved. And what I would like to do is, you know, do a listening tour, go to where they're at, go to the barbershops, go to the beauty salons, go to their restaurants and actually, have neighborhood, meetings with parents. If they voted for me or not, you know, they're still my constituency. So I want to get them involved and have these tough communication. Also, again, go to where they're at, encourage them to come to the board meetings, encourage them to get involved. That's the only thing basically we can do short of hiring more. I mean, I'm in favor of like, you know, hiring more psychologists and things of that nature going out to, cause I remember when I went to school, I had teachers and psychologists used to come to my home and sit down with my parents and had conversations in the home. And I thought that was very successful because, the parent, my parents knew my teachers more on a personal basis now, not just some teacher in a school. And by default, that got them involved because, you know, they felt like they had more say in what went on in the school system. So I say go to where the, your constituency is at and where they live and engage them there.
Okay. Thank you. So this question goes to you first, Mr. Madison. We talked about, you mentioned, test scores and other things. So I'm wondering what you see as a model school district that KUSD could learn from. And what about that school district makes it a model?
Well, there are schools in the system in our area that does a good job. I can't remember the name right offhand, but I would say that schools that have more control about their curriculum and how they teach and who they hire, let's say a private school or a real charter school that's not associated with the board, they have a tendency to do better. You ask yourself, why do they do better, right? They do better because the bureaucracy and, you know, the school system, it's not a one size fit all approach. Each neighborhood is different. Each school has its own culture, right? And so I think that the teacher need to adjust their curriculum based on their students and how the student learn. And the school that does that more successfully are the privates and charter schools that are not, the non-instrumentality charter schools. They do a hell of a job producing, grades. And also you look at the private schools like, Christian Life and, Kenosha Lutheran and Joseph, you know, they do a good job. And what's the difference? One of them, the school has more freedom to maneuver. And then the public school system is so bogged down with the bureaucracy and have to teach a certain way and have to have a certain curriculum. I think it's have a negative impact on student learning. And if you look, you know, and people vote their feet, right? 2022-2023 school year, only 208 people came in, 626 people left. And the majority of them went to non-KUSD entities like private schools because those are the schools that are giving parents, you know, the proper education for their kids.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Adams?
Yes, thank you. Okay, if we were to look at a school to model, I I would not look outside of Kenosha Unified School District. I think we're one of the best school districts in the state. We have over 19,000 students. We have, you know, 3 high schools, 5 middle schools, about 22 elementary schools, 5 charter schools, 5 choice schools, and Head Start program. We have all of that. We can't compare ourselves to a private school that does not have 19,000 students. That would be apples to oranges. So we need, if we were to go outside of our district, I would say then we would look at how one of the 3 largest, the other 2 largest school districts do things and what are their success stories. Because, you know, when you compare us to a private Catholic school, it's just not a good comparison. And, you know, we have what's called, you know, we have schools that shine in our district and they'll present to the board. They have programs within their schools that are working. And I think just sharing, you know, how their school year went and their best practices is how our other schools can improve. So we have school improvement plans, and those are important that we evaluate how the schools are doing. So I would look at our own school district. We're one of the best, and we need to improve, of course, in certain areas, but we're a model school ourselves.
Okay. Thank you. The next question will be Ms. Adams first. So recent changes to the state school funding law means that funds for vouchers for private schools are drawn from taxes paid into the public school system. So do you think that you as publicly elected board members should represent the public on those private school boards which draw from these funds? And if not, what kind of accountability should private schools have for the funds they use that come from public dollars?
Okay, so I just want to begin by saying that Kenosha Unified, you know, offers choice options for children in our district. So, you know, the decision to go to a voucher school, you know, isn't something that is needed, I don't think, in Kenosha. At a minimum, there should be public audits of voucher school budgets. That's not happening. When we talk about transparency and accountability, there is none for private schools and voucher schools. Staff requirements aren't reported. Their facilities are less than adequate. They don't have the classroom equipment that we have. And we know that, back in 2009, our state legislator eliminated the requirement that per pupil spending keep pace with inflation. So since 2012, they've had to cut $3.9 billion from our public schools. So that's one of the reasons teachers are leaving the district and, you know, struggling to make ends is because of that, because of what the state legislature did. And we know that the current governor wants to reverse it and add $1 billion to cover at least 60% of school districts' costs for special ed, and instead of the current 30%. So we're only getting reimbursed 30%. It should be 60. That would help our budget. And there was the commission, and it recommended restoring the state's commitment to fund 2/3 of the cost of public schools. That's what we need. So I think the accountability, we can't determine if these independent charters and other schools outside the public school system are actually, you know, we don't know how they're doing financially because the reporting requirements are so different.
Okay. Mr. Madison, your turn.
Let me start off by saying that if it was up to me, if I can change, if I was king for a day, right? Every parent should have the right to send their kids where they think their kid's going to get the best education. When you talk about return on investment, KUSD, you know, a few schools are doing well, but overall KUSD, it's not having a good return on investment. Again, we rank bottom 50 of the, within the bottom 50, we ranked even lower than that. So for the KUSD school that has all this regulation, that has this accountability, they're still doing horrible. So the private schools and the charter schools who don't have this, you know, this quote unquote regulation, how is it that they're outperforming the KUSD school system? So we can talk about budgets and all this stuff all day. Money does not, it's not the deciding factor, because you have people coming to this country from, like, for example, India, people who slept on dirt, you know, dirt floors, come over here and outperform our students all the time. People from third world come here and outperform our students all the time. Why is that? You think these third world countries or second world country has the school budget that we have here at KUSD? You think they're getting $300 million pumping into a system that producing kids who can't read or write? So we can talk about the private schools and the charters. We can talk about them, make them the villain all day long. But the truth of the matter is they are producing, and parents feel like they are getting a return on their investment. In the KUSD school system, they're not getting a return on their investment, not a good return. So people leave, you know, they're leaving the school system. So parents should not be locked in to a system that's not providing proper education for their children.
Okay, thank you. We're running low on time, so we have one more question and then the final statement. So, Mr. Madison, you get this question, the last one that I have. So recently there have been a number of reforms around teaching reading in Wisconsin and nationwide. Do you have any thoughts on the best way to teach reading or the best way to prepare teachers to teach reading?
I would say I'm not familiar with the updates you mentioned, but I would say this, that phonics to me personally, I think that's the right way to go, because how phonics is taught in just the basic classical education, you know, because if you go back and look at, let's go back to the 50s and the 60s, go look at an eighth grade book, an eighth grade math book or eighth grade, any kind of book, right? Today, they are considered to be college material. We have been dumbing down our systems this whole time. And, you know, you think they had the proper, had all this money going to the school system in the 50s? 40s, 50s, 60s? No. You know, they're very stern and very direct and deliberate how they taught classes. And it's a very classical way of teaching school. And now we have all this moving forward. We have all this money and something is wrong. I don't know what it is, but something is wrong where kids are not learning. What do you do about that, right? Parents who can go to private school, they do. But then you have parents that are stuck in these schools that they can't get out of them. So, again, I would like for every parent to get a voucher if they want one to go to the school of their choice so their kids can get educated the way they feel like they need to be educated. Now, with that said, I know that's not going to happen overnight. So we need to do things, make our KUSD school system better. We should be the people that folks are standing in line to get in, to get to our schools, not the other way around. And we can get there with hard work and dedication and commitment to our teachers, students, parents.
Okay, thank you. And Ms. Adams.
Okay, before I respond to the question, I just want to say that a Wisconsin universal choice approach would start out with over $500 million in property tax increases in our state. So that just doesn't work for me. That would be a tax increase. As it relates to the reading, we have a standing committee that we've had since I was on the board 20 years ago. It is the curriculum committee, and they go through months and months and months of review of our curriculum in reading and math and other subject areas. That committee is comprised of board members, teachers, community members, administration, and together they look at the reading materials and what is best, what's best for our schools. Do we need to change? It's a big investment when you change reading curriculum and any other one. You know, you have to get new books and all of that. It's a big expense. So a lot of thought goes into that, but it's a collaborative effort. Kenosha Unified is good about that. And I just want to kind of close by saying, when I ran for school board both times, I did not come in criticizing the district. I came in wanting to help and see where my expertise could maybe be of benefit to the district. I didn't criticize what the graduation rate was. I just wanted to be able to maybe improve that. We're graduating at the high 87-88%. We're not a bad school district. The other districts look to us. Again, we're a very good school district that is recognized in this state as one of the best. And I am very proud to be supportive of Kenosha Unified School District.
Thank you. So we're down to the end. So you each get a chance to do a closing statement. I think we have time for you each to have 90 seconds. So we'll start with Ms. Adams and then Mr. Madison. Please tell us sort of your summary of why you want to run for the school board and why you think you're qualified.
Okay. I get to go first. So I just want to close again by saying that, you know, I believe in supporting teachers. I think that's very important. We need to work collaboratively to address the needs of our students. My financial experience is what makes me qualified to represent and make decisions for this one of the third largest school district in Wisconsin to ensure that we remain fiscally responsible. This year, our board made budget cuts and adjustments to offset a $9.6 million budget deficit that resulted primarily because of declining enrollment. It was not because we were wasting money or mishandling money. It was because our enrollment is down due to the birth rate. I want to just thank everybody and everyone who's listening because that means they have an interest in public schools. I think I've proven as school board member that I'm committed and will share and implement new strategies to promote teamwork throughout our district and to ensure fiscal accountability to keep our district moving forward into the future. I want to see some changes made, and I think we're going to do that. And I'll have three more years if I get reelected to do that. And thank you for your support.
Okay. And Mr. Madison.
Thank you. Thank you again for having this forum. I would argue that numbers-wise, people are graduating, but I think that a lot of people are just being moved along. They're not graduating with the skills needed to be competitive in this new world. We need to focus on getting back to critical thinking skills. Education is not just about filling student mind with facts. It is about teaching them to think, to weigh competing ideas, and to become problem solvers. We also need to get back to basic literacy, math, and life skills are essential for success in today's world. And we need to ensure that every student in KUSD has access to these fundamental skills. Finally, I am committed to addressing any barriers to education that our student may face. We must work to ensure that every child has an equal opportunity to succeed. In conclusion, I ask for your support and your vote. Together, we can make KUSD the district that we all know it can be. A district that puts students first and prepare every child for success in life. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Thank you all for listening to this Education Matters 2023 Kenosha Unified School District Candidate Forum. And thank you to KUSD School Board candidates Lamar Madison and Yolanda Santos Adams. Once again, running for an office and desiring to serve, both of those are really admirable, and our democracy cannot function without having a spirited competition for these seats. So we appreciate your willingness to serve, and thanks to our listeners for tuning in.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
Join me, Lily Maselli, host of In Between the Music, Saturday during our journey through the mystical world of music and trivia together. That's Saturday at 10 a.m. on WGTD HD1.
Support comes from the Racine Symphony, performing a sacred masterwork on Good Friday, April 7th at First Presbyterian Church. Haydn's Seven Last Words of Christ is profoundly moving and meditative. For tickets, call 262-636-9285 or visit racinesymphony.org.
Hi, I'm Dave McGrath. Join me for the all-new Saturday Noon Tunes with local music.